This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 28th of May 2021. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle, which has been edited this week by Liz and Gordon Legg. This is the first time for a while that we've had three people in the studio here, and so I'm joined today by Ros Lydiard.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Peter Lydiard. Now, you might notice some change from the usual script this week, because a certain someone has forgotten his script and left it at home. So I'm having to wing it, but I hope I remember all the bits that I'm supposed to do.
Yay!
Right. Your headlines this week are: Bishop steps back, girl forced to eat dog food, council scope for barracks statement, and solar farm approved to joy of action group. Before we go on to have those headline stories, just to remind you that if you do have any problems with your recording box, please make sure that it has been plugged in and is charged up. But if you do have any difficulty, your contact is Liz Legree. Her telephone number is on the key, it's on the fob that is attached to your USB. Right, so let us go on, please, to the first headline from Richard, please.
Bishop steps back. The most senior churchman in Hampshire has stepped down from his role for several weeks amidst reports of discontent among clergy. A group of between 20 to 30 senior church members are understood to have threatened to pass a vote of no confidence in the Bishop of Winchester's leadership. The Right Reverend Tim Dakin is now taking a break from his role based at Wolvesey Palace in Minchester. The Church Times newspaper reported that there is discontent among the clergy in the diocese about his management style. The news was revealed on May the 19th by the Right Reverend Deborah Mary Sellin, Suffragan Bishop of Southampton, in a message to local churches. Bishop Deborah said the concerns are internal church matters, although she did not go into detail. She said, "I wanted to contact you all directly with an important update. Bishop Tim has today informed me that he will be stepping back from his role as Bishop of Winchester for the next 6 weeks, so that he can focus on discussions about future leadership and governance reform in the diocese. I fully support his decision. Bishop Tim and Lambeth Palace have requested that, over this period, I temporarily take responsibility for the diocese, and I shall be working with the team at Wolvesey to ensure full continuity. I realise that even before today's news, this has been an enormously challenging 15 months for us all as a diocese and as a church, as it has been for the entire country. On behalf of Bishop Tim and the team, I wanted to thank you once again for all you've been doing for your parishes and your communities in such trying circumstances." Church Times has reported that 20 to 30 senior church members in the diocese, clergy and laity, had threatened at the diocesan synod to pass a vote of no confidence in Bishop Tim's leadership. Newspaper also said discontent about Dr. Dakin's management style and agenda has been growing for some time. He's never worked in full-time parish ministry. The story has been published on Thinking Anglicans, a website reporting news affecting church people. One commentator, Reverend James Pitkin, vicar of Lockerley East Dean, East and West Sitherley, noted that job cuts had taken place in the diocese following a reduction in its budget. He said, "In April 20, the Diocesan Board of Finance adopted a 20% cut for the 2021 budget. This could only be met by reducing clergy posts by 22 and savage cuts on diocesan staff. I estimated it at 34% of staffing costs at diocesan level. Two archdeacons gone, leaving just one, and many other excellent staff lost." Another commentator, David Richards, said this has been brewing for some time. While I can appreciate how awful it must be for the bishop to be in the spotlight like this, and even I can sympathise with him, I'm afraid the responsibility rests at his feet, in my opinion. From the moment he arrived in the diocese, it was quite clear that he knew what was needed to wake up sleepy Winchester. He failed, or refused, to listen to the long experience of those already in post while adopting an arm's-length approach. The reason for the Bishop of Southampton's elevation into temporary charge is, according to the Church Times, because the senior suffragan bishop in the diocese, the Bishop of Basingstoke, the Right Reverend David Williams, sympathises with the protesters and has also stepped back.
Thank you, Richard. Rods, please.
Yes. This headline is Girl Forced to Eat Dog Food. A Winchester teenager who took her own life had written down the alleged abuse she suffered at home before her death. An inquest into Kezia Waller, 17, finished after 4 days with the coroner declaring a conclusion of suicide. The Peter Simmons student had moved into A2 Dominion support housing in City Road, where she was found hanging on the 25th of January 2020. She later died at Southampton General Hospital. It was at City Road she made friends with another girl who gave evidence at the hearing. She said that Ms. Waller had written down experiences from her past as she found them difficult to speak out. The note, read in part by Area Coroner Sam Marsh at the inquest, said that Ms. Waller was allegedly first hit by her mother when she was 8 years old. "I became a slave in my own home," it said. The note alleged that Ms. Waller had been forced to eat dog food and tied up to a tree in the rain. Ms. Waller also claimed that she slept with a noose under my pillow and was pinned to a shed by her neck and had a knife tied and held to her neck, and said she was raped on 2 different accounts, although the sexual attacker was not named. "I was called a coward for cutting myself and told to cut deeper and die by my stepdad," the note continued. The 4-day hearing also heard from Judon Salimar, a senior support worker at City Road who failed to cut Ms. Waller down despite being urged by a 999 call handler. He claimed that he had not been trained to deal with such an incident. He was called to Ms. Waller's room by another resident after she was unable to get hold of the teenager, who suffered with depression. After gaining entry using the master key, it was apparent that Ms. Waller was hanging and Mr. Salimar called emergency services. But reading from the 999 call script, Ms. Marsh said that the support worker was asked 7 times to check if the youngster was breathing and told 7 times to cut her down. It is believed that Mr. Salimar did not attempt either of these things. He told Winchester's coroner court, "I went in to check for breathing, but hadn't the right training. I didn't know where to check. I was shocked at that moment. I needed professional help. They asked me to cut her down, but I didn't know what to do and didn't have anything to do with it. I did what I think I can do in terms of my own ability." It was later revealed that Mr. Salimar had been first aid trained during his time at A2 Dominion, but he said this was only for casualties laying on the floor. "I was begging the emergency service and was in a state of shock," he added. "It was very intense." He also said he was unsure if he was able to reach the teenager's body. Previously, a witness claimed that Mr. Salimar told Ms. Waller that she should be locked up in a mental hospital. He denied this and claimed to have said, "City Road is perhaps not the best place for you, as it can't provide the support for your mental health." A2 Dominion's Director of Supported Housing, Joanna Evans, said the company has learned from the incident, which she claimed was the first of its kind to happen in any of its properties. She said at the time of Kezia's death, we were training our staff to be first response before professionals arrived. Now we are training our staff to deal with drug use, self-harm and suicide. All staff will soon be trained in these areas and in how to prevent these kinds of incidents and also to deal with them if it comes to it. Kezia's family have since issued a statement denying the allegations of abuse and said the alleged rapes were not committed by any member of her family.
The next headline story is Council's scope for barracks statement. Plans for the major redevelopment of Winchester's Army training camp have taken a step forward. The Defence Infrastructure Organisation, DIO, part of the Ministry of Defence, held an initial community consultation last year on its master plan for the future of St John Moore Barracks. A variety of housing has been proposed, including apartments and specialist elderly accommodation, along with a neighbourhood centre, which could include community and sport and leisure facilities. Part of the site has also been earmarked for employment and commercial use, with the potential use for a park and ride also being explored. Developers have now asked Winchester City Council for its opinion, formerly known as scoping opinion, in relation to the topics, methods of assessment and the level of detail that would be required for the environmental statement that must accompany a future planning application. Julie Pinnock, the Council's service lead for built environment, has responded to the developers with a 35-page report covering a number of points from climate change and carbon, transport, animal habitats and species and types of housing. The development site contains the Flower Down Site of Importance for Nature Conservation, SINC, which requires a long-term management plan. Ms Pinnock also asked developers to consider whether the SINC will have public access and the impacts that any access may have. In June 2019, the City Council declared a climate emergency and since then has been working towards the district becoming carbon neutral by 2030. The Council has asked developers to describe the likely and significant effects of the development on the environment and measures envisaged to avoid, reduce and, if possible, remedy those defects. It has provided a list of measures it would like to see in the scheme. These include the use of low carbon impact materials, encouragement of composting and a waste management plan that minimises rubbish going to landfill. But it has also asked developers to produce a sustainable transport strategy that maximises the convenience for residents and visitors of non-motorised transport options in and around the site and provides all residents and visitors the ability to charge electric vehicles. Any environmental statement should also contain an examination of the potential impacts on heritage assets. This includes the Littleton Conservation Area and listed buildings within it. Particular concern was raised around the Barracks Chapel, which was earmarked to remain. The planning application for the proposed scheme is currently expected to be submitted in mid-2021. The MOD will vacate the site in phases between 2022 and 2024.
A solar farm approved to the Joy of Action Group. Plans for a new solar farm near South Wanston have been approved. An application for the renewable energy site on Christmas Hill was first submitted in October last year. After being evaluated by Winchester City Council officers, permission has been granted, much to the delight of a local climate action group. David Jones, trustee and chair of WIN ACC's Renewable Energy Action Group, said, "This is excellent news for the Winchester district and is hopefully the first of many solar farm approvals. Our district should deliver its fair share of renewable energy as the UK transitions to a zero carbon economy by 2050. Winchester residents have a far higher carbon footprint than the average UK citizen. And with high levels of solar radiation available in our district, it's only right that we allocate a portion of our low-grade agricultural land to hosting temporary solar farms such as this one at Christmas Hill. Plus, an increase in biodiversity makes this a win-win for us all. The plans attracted 5 letters of objection, but twice as many letters of support. A spokesperson for Wynn ACC added, "Winchester District is well suited to hosting solar farms with some of the highest levels of solar radiation in the UK. The Christmas Hill site is ideal for a solar farm, being wedged into the V intersection of main roads. The site is largely hidden from surrounding viewpoints. Built into the approval of the application for the new solar farm is a wealth of measures to increase the biodiversity of nature on the site, including planting of new hedgerows, additional hazel scrub underplanting, adjusting security fences to allow free movement of wildlife, encouragement of chalk grassland with wildflowers, and additional bird nesting provision. No development or site preparation work shall commence until protective fencing has been erected around the Worthy Down Ditch and Bronze Age Burial Monument." Another application for a solar farm on the land of Godsfield Lane, Armsworth, north of Alresford, has yet to be considered. The proposal has seen scores of objections submitted, including one from Alan Titchmarsh.
Now we have the death notices, starting off from Ros, please.
Alexander, Anne Rosemary Alexander, passed away peacefully on the 16th of May 2021 in Winchester Hospital, aged 79 years.
Dalton, Ron Dalton, passed away peacefully on Wednesday the 19th of May, aged 90 years.
Hendry, Joan Elizabeth Hendry, passed peacefully on the 16th of May, aged 102.
Petch, Eric Robin James, Rob Petch, sadly passed away, aged 75 years, on the 12th of May, 2021.
Pyle, William Christopher Martin Pyle, passed away on Wednesday the 12th of May, 2021, at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, following a short illness, aged 79.
Pinnock, Jamie Pinnock, 12th of May, 2021.
Stacey, Anthony Stacey, formerly Assistant Director of Hampshire Social Services from 71 until 1987. Of Sutton Scotney, formerly of Oliver's Battery, passed on the 15th of May 2021, aged 98 years.
White, Joan Margaret White, sadly passed away on Friday the 14th of May, aged 103.
And now we move on to Christian comment read by Richard, please.
Thank you. And this is headed Stress Free, and it comes from Nigel Hemming, senior pastor at Winchester Vineyard Church. Back in 2018, a Mental Health Foundation study stated, "In the past year, 74% of people have felt so stressed they've been overwhelmed or unable to cope." Even before COVID, anxious people were reporting unhealthy habits of eating, increased drinking and smoking, and feelings of depression, anxiety and loneliness. There are lots of reasons, but among the most common are the impact of long-term health conditions and coping with debt. Many cite the pressure to respond to messages instantly as a major source of stress, along with comparing ourselves to others and feeling comfortable with our appearance and body image. Young people also report that the pressure to succeed can cause undue levels of stress. All these are very real issues, and there's plenty of good stress-busting advice to be found, but Jesus points to a more profound source of wisdom in Matthew 6:25-27. "Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear." Jesus goes on to give 3 simple reasons to not let ourselves be overtaken by worry. 1. Is life not more than food, and the body more than clothes? While not discounting our physical needs, Jesus puts them into perspective. It can be so easy to lose sight of God when all of our focus is on what's right in front of us. 2. Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are they not much more valuable than they? The birds don't worry about where their next meal is coming from. If God can provide for their needs, then why would he have a problem providing for his precious and valuable children? As parents, we naturally expect to provide for our offspring, and God is the same. Just like our children, though, part of growing up is learning the difference between what we want and what we actually need. 3. Can any one of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your life? You can't make your life any longer by worrying about it, Jesus says. In fact, scientists would say that stress has the potential to shorten our lives. Again, this is common sense, heavenly wisdom from a great source, and so worth paying attention to. Jesus finishes up his lesson with the very famous words from verse 33. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. This is the way I try to live my whole adult life, and I can honestly say that my family have never gone without anything which we have needed. Sometimes our help came at the last minute from an unexpected source, but God has always been generous to us as we have tried to put him first and be generous to others. It's a way of life I highly recommend, and it's guaranteed to reduce stress.
Thank you, Richard. Now we move on to editorial comment from Ros, please.
Yes, thank you. It's headed, New Leisure Centre is a Success Story. You've got to hand it to the council and its partners. The new leisure centre looks fantastic. Unlike many projects in the country, the pandemic hardly halted construction work and the opening date has not been delayed. And what better time for it to welcome people in? Just as social distancing measures are easing, residents who have been limited to running and home workouts for over a year can soon get fit in a state-of-the-art facility. But the council's work here is not over. A consultation over the future of the Leisure Park Centre and the recreation ground is underway, and chiefs must listen to what the public want, much as they did when consulting for the Bar End building. The reason the leisure centre is being welcomed by so many is because the council listened. And the reason Silver Hill has failed so many times is because, well, they didn't. Hopefully this is a learning curve, although it's more difficult to please everyone when it comes to larger schemes, particularly regenerating a huge part of the city.
Now we have letters to the editor, starting with Ros, please.
Yes, thank you. It's headed, Let's Not Ruin North Walls Park. Sir, pages 1 and 2 of last week's Chronicle outline the City Council's proposal for a revamped North Walls Park. One such proposal, illustrated on page 2, is a sculpture tower which is described as the park's newest landmark and a new visitor attraction. I cannot imagine any visitor or indeed resident being attracted to either this or to the totem pole proposed for the Park Avenue entrance. These unsightly gimmicks funded, no doubt, like the consultants involved, by public money, seem likely to deter rather than attract people. Surely a city that had once had the vision to commission Elizabeth Frink's beautiful statue of a horse and rider, sensitively sited in the Upper High Street, cannot sink so low. Also, with a lengthy list of additional proposals, there is the risk that, in trying to do too much, the peace and tranquility, tranquility people seek in a city centre park with its own natural beauty is unwittingly destroyed. And that came from Mary Pearson of Manor Close, Winnell.
Lucinda Pilbrow says, open River Park. So if great means big to the Winchester civic chiefs, that explains why they've agreed to enlarge the city by building more and more houses and have spent vast sums of money on an Olympic-sized pool and indoor sports area on the far edge of town, which cannot be safely reached by most residents on foot or by bicycle. They've closed River Park Leisure Centre and have plans to make the surrounding North Walls Park, also known as River Park Recreation Ground, into a great park with things unified and diverse, with a grand entrance and a sculptural observation tower. As it is, the park is much used by cyclists, walkers, dog walkers, fitness groups and various sports. A new park canopy stroke solar-powered shade structure could be built for enhancing the green space, creating a comfortable and cool space and reducing the park's energy footprint. What gibberish. The park has had no covered area in which to exercise since the closure of the leisure centre, and an affordable way to adapt the old building for indoor sport is of prime importance. Or are those who wish to exercise out of the rain to risk their lives on bicycles or onto the road traffic pollution to get to Bar End? Why does Winchester City Council feel able to close existing sports facilities near the centre of town and yet encourage more house building? I can only hope this is a temporary closure. Lucinda Pilbrow, Oglander Road, Abbots Barton, Winchester.
And the third letter on the same subject comes from Sir Anthony Walker, KCB. And it's headed, Not a Theme Park. Sir, in your issue of the 20th of May, you describe Winchester City Council's ideas for the future of the North Walls Recreation Ground as radical. For me, they evoke the memories of the successful 2014 Save the Rec campaign, which I was privileged to chair. Our campaign slogan was, Keep it green beyond the stream. Now, these proposals do not do that, and the council will be well advised to remember how well-loved the rec is by electors. Underpinning all else, how does the council expect residents to make cogent comments when the future of the adjacent leisure centre site is still undecided? That said, the language of the proposals suggests that the consultants who have written them are specialists in public relations rather than recreation grounds. Great parks are made up of great places with a diverse combination of things to do throughout the day and throughout all seasons. North Walls will be a great park loved by a great city community. Function and beauty, activity, quiet exploration and play, landmarks and river context. The author of these platitudes seems not to know that the Rec is already a great park and that any changes to it must be made with the greatest care, sensitivity and respect for its history and users. Some of the specific ideas are likely to be welcome, for instance the provision of toilets, the improvement to the Park Avenue entrance, the new surface for runners and a better children's playground. Some, like a clean river and a network of walking and cycle paths and the retention of the sports pitches and the retention, are already there. Others, like recycling initiatives and increased biodiversity, are meaningless without being spelled out in detail. Will the council invite the Hampshire Wildlife Trust, which manages much of the neighbouring land, to work jointly on proposals for increased biodiversity? This is a recreation ground, not a theme park. A sculpture tower come observation tower come helter-skelter and a yellow-painted bridge and undefined inspiring artwork and some concrete solar trees would effectively turn a green space into an urban one. And more important than painting the banana bridge yellow, surely, is to modify it to enable users of manual wheelchairs to get over it without assistance. If the council wants a pathfinder project for the future of the wreck, it already has a brilliant one. It is a replacement of the derelict summer-only cricket pavilion by AR Design's imaginative design for a new year-round multi-sport pavilion, which may also function as a pop-up cafe, making the proposed coffee van redundant. I urge the council to declare its plans for the future of the leisure centre site and then to replace these proposals with some better thought-out ideas appropriate to our much-loved wreck. The proposed urbanisation of this cherished green park will surely turn the wreck into a wreck. See what he did there? So that was written by Sir Anthony Walker, KCB of Nuns Road, Winchester.
Simon Lever writes next, and we haven't missed the subject yet. On the surface, proposals for a revitalised North Wall Park are encouraging. Chronicle, May 20th. However, it would be a shame if the park turned into a fairground. Paraphrasing. Diverse and complementary outdoor rooms. Focused activities. New park canopy, solar powered shade. Structure built for enhancing green space. Creating comfortable, cool space. Reducing the park's energy footprint. Recycling initiatives. Does this mean litter bins? Perhaps a translation into normal English would help. Green spaces are under increasing threat. These proposals seem to do the opposite. Let us preserve Winchester's green spaces. And that's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
And Aaron Wigley is also having a moan, this time about Hyde Street. So we were led to believe the closure of Hyde Street was to provide more separation for pedestrians in North Walls. This makes no sense, having this measure only in North Walls and nowhere else, apart from a section of Jury Street. The resulting congestion has caused an increase in pollution and unnecessary delays for motorists. I strongly suspect this measure was introduced more for the benefit of High Street residents, a quieter road, and ease of parking, than for the well-being of others. Alan Wigley, Harwood Place, Kingsworthy.
This next letter is written by Liz Hutchinson. It's headed Affordable Homes. Sir, Ian Tate, Chronicle Letters, May 20th, is right. Winchester town desperately needs more affordable homes. This is widely recognised, and I have had a similar experience to him when knocking on doors. Many people highlight this need and are anxious to see more being done to resolve the problem. He's also right in saying that Winchester must debate affordable housing provision and where it can be built. For a number of years, many, including councillors, the City of Winchester Trust and Wynn ACC, have been arguing for a coherent strategic approach to identifying sites for houses and other development. This needs to be facilitated by those with expertise to stimulate the debate and come forward with realistic proposals based on consensus. Now, building on the work carried out last year for the Winchester Vision 2020 to 2023, it is time to start. Unlike Ian Tate, however, I believe there is land in Winchester town, much of it owned by Winchester City Council in particular, that could well be developed for affordable homes. Mainly, this is in areas where buildings have been demolished and the land used on a temporary basis, albeit over many years as car parks. With the proposed provision of nearly 600 new parking spaces at Bar End, what better time to focus on this? Such development could have multiple benefits, the provision of much-needed homes close to facilities being one. Additionally, it would bring people back to live in the heart of the town, so supporting the high street and local businesses while reducing the need for people to commute into Winchester, and so contributes to cutting car usage and pollution. It could also be an opportunity to demonstrate the council's commitment to reducing carbon by building passivhaus standards. If well designed, it would also vastly improve the attractiveness of the town for all residents, visitors and those who work here. We are at the start of a new period. Let us hope that at last the opportunity will be seized and progress will be made to improve the town and address this important issue. That letter was written by Liz Hutchison, Clifton Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Oh, I've got this title, Sheriff and Ward. Now, how many people's memory is tickled by that name? Sheriff and Ward. I remember it. So, the demise of Debenhams was a particularly sad occasion for me. It was where I started my first job at what was called Sheriff and Ward. It was in a dispatch department for the princely sum of £4 a week. We sent parcels to customers by Royal Mail or bulkier articles via British Railways. We also received stock from the railway station, which came by a dedicated railway lorry, carrying only supplies for our shop. In the shop itself, I remember that the staff at the counters did not account for the sale of any articles. They put the bill and payment in a torpedo-shaped metal cylinder, which was conveyed to the accounts office. A receipt and any change due was returned in the cylinder, which had travelled upstairs on a wire system and come back by the same means. Early closing day in Winchester was on Thursday, when shops in the city closed their doors at lunchtime for the day. With no dispatch duties on this day, we set to polishing the wooden floors and counters. One day in 1960, the railway delivery driver, Fred Cooper, told me there was a vacancy in the goods department at the railway station for £6 a week. I duly got the job and worked my way up to become a clerk in the ticket office at Winchester Station, from which I retired after 46 years' service in 2006. And that very, very nostalgic story was from Rod Youngman of Cromwell Road, Stanmore, Winchester.
The next letter is headed True Colours. Sir, now that the BBC's true colours have been exposed as being deceitful, dishonest, plus more, surely now is the time to publicly defund this organisation and release the great British public from being forced to pay and support it. It's reported the BBC intend to make changes. So they should now change to become a self-supporting organisation standing on their own 2 feet like all businesses in the private sector. In addition, the current charter, they should be removed. They should have... I beg your pardon. In addition, the current charter, they should be removed. I don't understand that. All who agree should lobby their local MP. A. Parker, be a week close, week Winchester.
How exciting. The next letter is written by Peter... Sir Peter Innes. Junction 9 of the M3. Sir, the long-awaited consultation on Junction 9 M3 project commences on May the 27th. The first SOCC document now available mentions just 3 major comments arising from the previous consultation. The first of these, in the way it is expressed, is extremely concerning. Quotes, the length available for vehicles to change lanes when joining the A34 from Junction 9 and then heading on to the A33 Kingsworthy. This entirely misses the point which so many of us have been making, that weaving across a fast-moving major highway is plain dangerous. The importance of this whole scheme is that heavy traffic on the A34, one of the country's most important arteries, should flow freely through this junction in both directions without the delay of becoming mixed up with local traffic. For the A34 to pass through weaving local traffic would be contrary to this principle. Accidents, delays and speed restrictions would be inevitable. Local traffic on the A33 link is not unimportant. It serves the communities of the Worthies, the Itchen Valley, served by the B3047, the villages along the A33 up to the A303 junction, new developments such as King's Barton, plus the whole of the north of Winchester. The last of these is essential to reduce traffic on the city centre's one-way system. For such a local stream to weave across both lanes of a fast-moving, heavily trafficked national highway is not merely senseless, it is highly dangerous, no matter how long the weaving distance. Contributors to the previous consultation suggest a feasible revision to the layout to correct this, a separate, clear link to the A33. There would be costs involved, but small in comparison with the total. This need caused no detriment to the environment, no encroachment on the SSSI of the Itchen Valley. To persist with the previous plan, despite minor amendments, would be on a par with smart motorways. Human life cannot be the subject of empirical risk analysis. We have just 6 weeks to ensure that this is sorted out. Protest! Everyone, write to Highways England, your councillors, your MP, be heard. And that was written by Sir Peter Innes of Nations Hill, Headbourne Worthy.
Missing train. Sir, I am pleased to see that the City Museum has now opened. Roger Brown's model of the Winchester had a tiny Victorian train which has apparently been lost. There must surely be someone capable of making a replacement. Hercule Poirot, where are you? Perhaps the museum could get it done as a small token of its reopening. And that was written by Tony Burrows of St. Swithin Street, Winchester.
Les Broad reminds us of forgotten battles. And I'm sure a lot of your readers will know, in 1915-16, elements of the Royal Hampshire Regiment and the Hampshire Howitzer Battery were besieged with other British and Indian Army troops in Kut al-Amara, south of Baghdad. Some died in the siege of starvation or from enemy action, and the survivors were taken into captivity upon the capitulation of the garrison. The majority of those died in horrific circumstances, and only a small minority lived to return home. My grandfather was part of the unsuccessful relief force. Because of him, I researched the story of the siege and then started a campaign for a permanent and accessible UK memorial. This was unveiled in September 2019 in Maidstone, Kent, and is the only such memorial in the country. It's also the only memorial dedicated to the memory of British and Indian troops equally. There is another in the crypt of St Paul's Cathedral, but that makes no mention of Indian troops. There's a book, Grandfather's War, written by me, now available, that gives the story behind the creation of the memorial. Copies are available from me at £9 plus £2 for post and packing by phoning 07717 052 622. 07717 052 622. This is being raised now because there is a strong sense in Kent that the whole story of the siege seems to have been airbrushed out of history. And I'd be surprised if that feeling was not present among the surviving families of men of the Hampshires who died so far from home. There's Broad, Rose Cottage, Clarac Park, St Asaph, Denbighshire.
Well, now we have a few items of things that are coming up in the near future, starting with Roz, please.
Yes, I've got Amdram Groups Unite for Theatre in the Garden Festival in Winchester. Characters from Gilbert and Sullivan and Shakespeare came together to launch the Theatre in the Garden Festival. They met in the garden of Wolsey Palace, where A Midsummer Night's Dream, presented by the Chesil Theatre and Winchester Musicals and Operatic Society's WEMOS, The Pirates of Penzance, will be performed in July. Sarah Hawkins, the director of the much-loved Shakespeare Company comedy, is working with an experienced cast of Chesil regulars and talented newcomers, plus a delightful young band of fairy folk. They will create a magical forest with squabbling lovers, feuding fairies, tricks and reconciliations, and a spoof Amjam performance guaranteed to bring lots of laughter. Sarah invites audience to bring their picnics and to prepare for an evening of mayhem, magic and merriment. The play will be performed from July the 13th to the 17th. WAMOS is swing aboard on July the 20th to the 24th, sorry for that, with the Pirates of Penzance, the first show performed by the Society in 1913. The 2021 version will give a classic twist by being set by the seaside in 1957. Audiences will hear all the old favourites, but with nods to the 1950s, with hints of Doris Day, Elvis and Cliff in the arrangements, and director Suzanne Hall promises a rollicking outdoor adventure with pirates, picnics, policemen and sand between your toes. In line with COVID restrictions, all rehearsals are taking place via Zoom or out of doors. Tickets for both productions are now available online via the websites chesiltheatre.org.uk and wamos.org.uk. Let me go through those again for you. The first is Chesil Theatre, no spaces, lowercase, chesiltheatre.org.uk and WAMOS, that's WMOS, all lowercase, .org.uk. Audience members will be limited to ensure the safety of everyone.
And the Youth Theatre is devising a new show in lockdown. When the curtain fell on Encore at the Theatre Royal last year, there was no way of anticipating the year that lay ahead of them. The Youth Ensemble originally planned to celebrate their 40th anniversary, but that fell apart because of the pandemic. Despite theatres going dark across the country, Encore members decided to use lockdown to do something positive, making sure that they were still connected with each other and doing something creative. The result is a new musical, Dark and Bright, which tells a contemporary, life-affirming story that gives a powerful voice to young people living through the challenges of recent times. Young performers have worked with artistic director Noel Jones to devise the characters, storyline and script, which uses the words and experiences of the cast themselves. Original music has been composed by William Pickering, himself a former member of Encore, whilst the lyrics are the result of a dazzling partnership between Hannah Castleman, also a former member, and Julian Payne, a parent to two of the members. Noel said, "Dark and Bright is a celebration of family, friendship and love, which is an absolute reflection of Encore itself. We're so lucky to work with the most inspiring, brave and talented young people. It's about a young man whose world is turned upside down following the death of his mother. Feeling lost and alone, he pushes everyone who loves him away until he's approached by a pair of mysterious strangers. Both offer Xander the hand of friendship, but one of them will lead him down a dark path while the other will guide him to a brighter place. The question is, whose hand will he take?" Member of the company Tallulah said, "It's a really important story to tell because it addresses lots of issues that are facing young people today, including mental health, friendship, identity and love. We wanted to be able to bring these things to people's attention, to talk about and not hide away from. To be able to do it through musical theatre is extremely powerful and sends out some incredibly positive and strong messages." So it's on next week, Dark and Bright runs at the Theatre Royal from June the 2nd, 3rd and 4th, and you can visit the theatre's website for tickets. Of course, they'll be limited because of social distancing, so better get on and book.
Thank you, Richard. This item is headed Immerse Yourself in the 1940s at a Railway Event. The Watercress Line is inviting guests to experience the spirits of the 1940s. There will be themes of glamour and the Blitz as the historic railway heads back in time to World War II. War on the Line on June the 12th and 13th will feature both civilian and military reenactors to make visitors feel as if they are in Churchill's Britain. There'll be vintage vehicles, live music, dancing and historic displays. Guests can enjoy a 1940s makeover at Pearl's Pin-Up Parlour at Ropley Station and then emerge to see an incredible Spitfire flypast, subject to weather conditions. Visitors are invited to immerse themselves into the era, whether they wish to dress up or come in civilian attire and soak up the atmosphere. Simon Baggett, General Manager, said, "We can't wait to see visitors kitted out in their 1940s attire, enjoying the vintage steam trains and vehicles and music from the era." And just a couple of last things about things coming up. Apparently, there is a grand opening on the 1st of June of a new shop in St George's Street, Winchester, called Basil Leaf. It says, "We will be providing over 60 types of cheeses from England, France, Spain, Switzerland and Greece, carefully chosen delicious charcuterie and organic raw meats from Wales, high quality foods, pastas from Italy, white and yellow tuna tins from Spain, fresh organic fruits and vegetables, local bakery." Sounds extraordinary. And the last thing is also food related. It's headed Chili Champ Coming to City.
Ooh.
Britain's reigning chili-eating champion intends to break world records at a Winchester event. Local residents invited to take on Shaheen Wasim at Foodies Festival when it comes to this city in July. The West Londoner, who recently appeared on ITV's Game of Talents, is set to go into the Chili Eating Hall of Fame later this year with 100 consecutive contest wins. She said, "The pressure to win is immense. I've come up against some very strong opponents, men and women. That's what I love about chili eating contests. It's a form of extreme competitive sport which is not affected by age or gender. I've also witnessed some really funny moments and entertaining reactions from those taking part. As the competition hots up and the Scoville Heat Unit, SHU, rises, the enthralled spectators see competitors go from confidently showing off and enjoying themselves to extreme sweating, tears, cramps and running for the nearest sick bin or bucket of ice water." Shaheena's unbeaten record in officiating chili-eating contests that are accepted by the world governing body for competitive chili-eating, the League of Fire, is 76 consecutive wins. More than 150 exhibitors will showcase their produce. It comes to the River Park Recreation Ground from Friday, July the 16th to Sunday, July the 18th. Well, next we have the article written by Carly Desis from Richard, please.
Which is entitled, "The Gaslighting of Diana." Gaslight was a 1938 play by the British writer Patrick Hamilton. You may even have seen it recently at the Chesil Theatre. Later turned into a film, the heroine is driven mad by her husband, who presents her with false evidence, making her doubt her sanity. One of the earliest examples of a so-called psychological thriller. In 1995, not many people used the term gaslighting to capture such cruel behaviour. It took the new millennium to bring the word into common parlance. However, looking back, we can see that that was exactly what was done to Diana, Princess of Wales, by Winchester resident Martin Bashir. Diana was already suffering, as was her husband, from the devastation that accompanies marital breakdown. the side taking by people you thought were friends, the insecurity, concern and guilt about the children's well-being, the general feeling that your life is spinning out of control. For many, impending divorce is worse than bereavement. The prince and princess had to play out all this in the glare of the world's media. At such times, you look to your friends for support. Martin Bashir was an ambitious, though relatively unremarkable, broadcast journalist. He had a brainwave. Why not play upon Diana's fears and insecurities and insinuate himself into her life and confidence? Let's mock up bank statements purporting to prove that people close to Diana were receiving cash for confidences and show them to her brother, Earl Spencer. Already under extreme pressure, as her son William so eloquently put it, all this added to Diana's paranoia. Here was real evidence that people were out to get her. Fatefully, she poured out her heart to Bashir on TV. BBC management comes out of this badly. As with the Savile debacle, it appears a number of people knew something, but nobody seemed to want to put it together. At the time, as veteran John Humphreys has confirmed, we chattering broadcast journos scratched our heads about how the relatively unknown Bashir had secured the scoop interview of the century. No one in top management seemed to share this puzzlement. Why? The fundamental issue is the one about culture. BBC management will no doubt indulge in the usual vapid talk of lessons will be learnt and bring in fatuous and wasteful training courses, but they need to look at themselves, the kind of people who habitually get to the top of such organisations. Their culture and attitude is summed up by one word: smug. I so remember endless meetings at the BBC where such pointy heads opined on everything, but fundamentally talked unmitigated, arrogant, bollocks. So, no surprise when I heard that the then editor of Panorama, the late Steve Hewlett, when faced with a whistle-blowing graphic designer, concerned about how his bank statement mock-up might be used, patted him on the head and told him to leave it to the grown-ups. Grown-ups like Tim Gardam, who subsequently elided nicely from his top job in the Beeb into a sinecure as master of an Oxford college. Or Tony Hall, a BBC lifer who'd secured, straight from Oxford, a much-coveted place on the BBC's graduate trainee scheme. As John Humphreys, left school at 15 for the Penarth Times and therefore clearly not BBC senior management material, has said, Hall holds the key to why Bashir was rehired, even after a subsequent checkered history with a couple of American networks. What does Bashir have, and on whom? As to his gaslighting of the princess, Bashir has apologised using words like regret. Why did he do it? Who knows? But let's use a couple of words presumably familiar to religious editors: wicked and evil.
Thank you, Richard. Now, we have a piece by Bill Garum, funnily enough, on the same subject, because it's headed Downfall of a Rogue Reporter. Winchester's former media superstar, Martin Bashir, has been exposed as a charlatan. The inquiry by retired Judge Lord Dyson into how Bashir, 58, secured the 1995 Panorama interview with the Venerable Diana, Princess of Wales, found that he commissioned faked bank statements to secure the scoop and then lied to BBC managers. Lord Dyson decided the BBC fell short of the highest standards of integrity and transparency which are its hallmark. The hard-hitting report added the subsequent investigation by Lord Hall was flawed and woefully ineffective. In light of Bashir's serious and unexplained lies, Lord Hall could not reasonably have concluded, as he did, that Mr. Bashir was an honest and honourable man. The biggest question is how the BBC, knowing what it did, allowed Mr. Bashir to return to work for it in 2016. He recently resigned as religion editor and has been convalescing from heart surgery and COVID-19. For several years, Mr. Bashir and family lived on Clifton Road, Orams Harbour, before his career took him to the United States and then to London. The departure brought peace to the neighbourhood, as his son was known to play his dance music rather loudly for most tastes. Mr. Bashir was a popular person on party invitation lists during his time locally, and with a strong sense of his own importance. At one party, the hostess introduced him to a local journalist, saying smilingly, "You two are in the same line of business." To which Mr. Bashir, turning to the reporter, said, "Oh, are you a TV celebrity interviewer too?" Bizarrely, at one time in the early noughties, his techno-playing son got into an ongoing dispute with the son of the head of Winchester College, Nick Tate. It made the national newspapers, and one local reporter knocked on Mr. Bashir's front door and left a business card when no one answered. A few days later, he spotted Mr. Bashir sipping an espresso outside Tom's Deli on St. George's Street, and after he finished, took his chance to approach him. The great investigative journalist hissed, "Don't ever knock on my door again," as he strode imperiously onto the pedestrian crossing close to Brian's hot dog stand, followed by suitably derisive laughter. Now, before we move on to items of general news, I know that many of you are sitting on the edge of your seats waiting for the lighting up times. So I can tell you that during the week, the sun will rise at about 5 o'clock in the morning and the sun will set at about 9 o'clock in the evening. So nice long days, and it'll shortly be the longest day of the year, and then winter is approaching. So with that exciting news, I'm passing over to Roz for the first news item, please.
I think that was riveting. Absolutely. Well, I've got an even better piece of news here. A chicken goes on the run. It is not every day you see a police officer chasing a chicken. But on Tuesday in Bishop's Waltham, the Winchester District team had to return this bird back home. Whilst on patrol, the officers completed their good deed for the day by assisting a member of public. A quick investigation concluded there was no foul play and the chicken was escorted back to its coop.
Boom, boom. Some rather encouraging news, I think. County's COVID death toll revealed. Grim subject, but not entirely. Coronavirus may have gone from the Winchester district. No areas have reported more than 2 cases in the 7 days to May the 20th, the most recent localised figures available. It's possible that there may be an isolated case or two in places, but they are not released by the government because of patient confidentiality. For the 85th day, no COVID-related deaths have been reported in the Winchester district. Since the start of the first lockdown last spring, 183 people have died within 28 days of a positive test. There have been no new deaths since March the 1st. Across the district in the week to May the 21st, there have been 4 cases, down 4 on the previous week, for a rolling number per 100,000 people of 3.2. The Press Association National News Agency reported that figures to May the 21st show only 12 local authority areas out of 315 in the UK with a better record than Winchester. For May the 18th, there were 23 better places. No deaths have been reported by the NHS in Hampshire for 19 days. However, more than 1,900 Hampshire lives have been lost due to the coronavirus. Figures from NHS England published on Tuesday afternoon show that a total of 1,907 Hampshire patients with coronavirus have died since the start of the pandemic in March last year. The number of COVID deaths in the 3 hospitals of the Hampshire Hospitals Foundation NHS Trust is at 439, with no deaths for 32 days. Southampton University Hospital has recorded a total of 483 deaths, and a total of 912 deaths have been recorded at Portsmouth. Solent NHS Trust remains with a total of 15 deaths, and Southern Health NHS Trust remains with 58.
Scarecrow Trail back by popular demand. The Uzzlebury Scarecrow Trail is back by popular demand. Visitors to the hilltop village near Winchester will be able to follow the trail of more than 30 scarecrows from this Saturday, that's May the 29th, until Sunday, June the 6th. The straw characters depict favourite family films from across the decades and adorn the main roads and the glebe field beside the church. Offering COVID-secure half-term entertainment, the trail also gives visitors the chance to win an afternoon tea. There will be free parking beside the church, a picnic area, family meals and refreshments at the Ship Inn, and Mr. Marucci's ice cream van. The person who correctly identifies the most correct scarecrow themes will have a chance to win a meal for four at the Ship Inn, Uzzlebury. And the most popular scarecrow entry wins afternoon tea from Tea to You. Scarecrow trail maps are on sale from 10 a.m. every day beside St Andrew's Church and cost £5. The inaugural Uzzlebury Scarecrow Trail in 2020 was based on favourite nursery rhymes and fairy tales, the favourite of which was the Hickley family's Jack and Jill.
I have a slightly more serious title now. It's Fatal Collision. A motorcyclist has been killed in an accident which closed part of the M3 for several hours. A man in his 40s, from Southampton, was involved in a collision with a lorry between junctions 8 and 9 on the southbound carriageway of the M3 shortly before 2 p.m. on Friday. The motorcyclist was pronounced dead at the scene. His next of kin have been informed and are being supported by specialist officers. He has yet to be named. A police spokesman said, "Officers are making inquiries as to the exact circumstances of the collision and are keen to hear from anyone who can assist them. If you witnessed the incident, have any dash cam footage, or would like to talk to us about this incident, please contact us on 101, quoting reference 44210196. 667. I'll give you that number again. It's 44210196667. It goes on. We would like to thank motorists for their patience while officers worked hard to investigate the incident and at the same time assist people off the carriageway. The closure of the 10-mile section of the southbound motorway caused travel disruption and delays on nearby roads.
Village shut off as unofficial horse fair goes ahead. Crowds of gypsies and travellers defied police by turning up for a horse fair which had been cancelled. The Wickham Horse Fair, which usually attracts thousands, had been cancelled for a second year to prevent the spread of the coronavirus. Signage had been placed on all main routes into the village, but that didn't stop dozens of gypsies and travellers bringing their horses for the annual event last Thursday. Roads into the village were blocked as police tried to disperse the crowds which had gathered in the square. Visitors to the fair can normally buy and sell horses, participate in the horse run, and buy wares from the market stalls which line the streets. The event was called off in March after a consultation between representatives of the event, police and city and county councils. A small, symbolic event was due to take place involving one or two horses, quote, to maintain the tradition. A spokesperson for Hampshire Constabulary said prior to the event, "We'll be facilitating a symbolic event. It'll be small and attendees have been agreed in advance." Travellers' families are thought to have been gathering at Wickham Horse Fair since 1269, and it's now one of the main events in the horse riding calendar. Local residents and business owners spoke of their frustration as scores of travellers and their horses arrived, forcing police to close all roads. Laura Haste, manager of the Square Cow pub, which directly faces the crowds of travellers, kettled into an area just off the square. She argued that crowds were always to be expected, even though we were supposed to have been cancelled. "We closed yesterday tea time. Once we realised the cancellation was going to be ignored, we decided to close for the day. We were in the midst of a national lockdown last year when the event wasn't on, but this year it was always going to be harder to stop people from coming. Some of the gypsies were in the pub last night and they were pleasant enough. But it has affected trade in the square today. We've been really busy all this week before today. Things were just starting to get going again. I think it was always inevitable that it was going to happen today because tradition has gone back centuries. We'll open up tomorrow. I think it'll be by then. We have a busy weekend ahead of us."
Apology to Kemp abuse survivors. The Archbishop of Canterbury has issued a full personal apology to the survivors of abuse by a QC who attended Christian holiday camps in the 1970s and 1980s. John Smythe, who died aged 77 in 2018, violently beat teenage boys who attended the camps, according to a secret report from the Ivern Trust in 1982, which funded the camps. Smythe was previously chairman of the trust. Justin Welby, who worked as a dormitory officer at the camps in the late 1970s, said, "I am sorry that this has been done in the name of Jesus Christ by a perverted version of spirituality and evangelicalism. It is clear that the impact of this has been widespread. I want to offer this apology, in addition to those Smythe victims that I have not met. I continue to hear new details of the abuse and my sorrow, shock and horror grows." The report said that after identifying the boys, mostly from Winchester College, Smythe took them to his home in Hampshire and carried out lashings in his garden shed with a cane.
Oh.
8 of the boys received a total of 14,000 lashes, according to the report, written by 2 clergymen. 2 more boys received 8,000 strokes between them over 3 years.
Oh.
It is reported that both the Ivern Trust and Winchester College knew about the abuse in the 1980s, but failed to report it to the police. Mr. Welby, who has said that he was completely unaware of abuse at the camps when he worked there, met with a group of survivors last month. He said in a statement issued by Lambeth Palace, "These victims are rightly concerned that no one appears to have faced any sanction yet, when it is clear that a number of Christians, clergy and lay, were made aware of the abuse in the 1980s and many learned in subsequent years. I am told by survivors that some facilitated Smythe's move to Africa." Mr. Welby said that victims were angry that Smythe was not stopped in 2013 when disclosure was made to the Diocese of Ely. Responding to Welby's statement, a group of survivors said, "We are pleased that the Archbishop of Canterbury is taking responsibility and acting as a good example for other culpable parties involved in our story. It is clear that a large number of individuals, clergy and lay, have known about these abuses for over 30 years. The Church of England's National Safeguarding Team will investigate every clergy person or others within their scope of whom that they have been informed who knew and failed to disclose the abuse. The Church of England has ordered an independent review of its handlings of allegation by Smythe." Mr. Welby said the review, which is expected to conclude this year, will be published in full.
Eateries told to improve food safety. An eatery at Winchester Hospital has received a scathing report from the Food Standards Agency. Tops Days Nursery needs major improvements in its management of food safety and has been hit with a 1 out of 5 score by the regulator. It also must improve the way it handles food. Shanghai Papa in St George's Street has also been slapped with a similar rating, failing in its management of food safety. Elsewhere in the city, Happy Pizza Mermaid's Fish and Chips in Garput Road has ranked 3 out of 5. It was rated good in one category and generally satisfactory in 2. Pizza Pan in the Andover Road also received a 3, ranking generally satisfactory all round. In Stanmore, Jaipur Spice in Wavell Way was ranked 4 out of 5, ranking good at 2 of the 3 areas, alongside the Taste of Gurkha in Eastgate Street. West Holme Nursing Home, the Red Lion in Southwark, and the Rising Sun in Bridge Street, Winchester, all have been rated 5 out of 5. The Chronicle checks food hygiene ratings from across the district weekly. A number of the reports mentioned were conducted in March, but have only recently been uploaded to the website.
And some more good news. Vaccine coverage increases. More than 2 in 5 people in Winchester have received 2 doses of the COVID-19 vaccine. NHS data shows over 41,000 people have received both jabs by May the 16th, which is 41% of those aged between 16 and over, based on the latest population figures. Of those who've received both jabs, nearly 40,000 were aged 40 and over, making 54% of the appropriate age group. In Winchester, Southampton, over 60,000 people have received both jabs, and in Basingstoke, over 51,000. Across England, 17.1 million people have received a second dose of the jab by May the 16th, 38% of the population aged 16 and over. That includes 15.1 million people aged 40 and over, 53% of the population. In total, 30.4 million people had received at least one dose of a vaccine by the same date, covering 67% of the people over 16. That's impressive, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
The 82nd mayor and the first for Winchester. There have been 821 mayors of Winchester, but the 822nd will be the first from Whiteley. Vivian Ashwell's elevation to the role was ratified last Wednesday at a full council meeting at River Park Leisure Centre. Councillor Ashwell has represented the Whiteley ward, now called Whiteley and Shedfield, since 2008. She married her husband, Sud Sagia, a chemical engineer, in 1980, and they lived in India and Saudi Arabia for some 16 years, where she worked in teaching. They have a daughter. Returning to the UK in 1997, the Ashwells moved to Whiteley, and she got involved in community activities and worked as a teaching assistant at Whiteley Primary School, and also for 3 years as the school lollipop lady. Proposing her, Councillor Therese Evans said, "Vivian is the most kind-hearted and helpful person. If there is something that needs action, she will take it on. With Vivian, what you see is what you get. She is an unassuming, positive person, unfazed by obstacles." After her election was unanimously agreed by councillors, there was a musical interlude, a recording by Year 6 pupils at Whiteley Primary School. In a pre-recorded speech, Councillor Ashwell said she was honoured to be elected mayor and said the theme of her fundraising would be families, children and young people with mental health problems. Her chosen charities are Friends of the Family, Winchester Youth Counselling and Eight Foundation. Tributes were paid to the retiring mayor, Patrick Cunningham. Councillor Cunningham said it had been the biggest honour of his life to have been mayor and the first Irishman in the role. He said it had been a morality amid Zoom and Teams, as one of the things he would remember most is the refrain, You're still muted. Councillor Ashwell was elected at a virtual meeting on Tuesday, with the decision ratified 24 hours later that evening. Usually the election and the ratification is done in one evening. A council spokeswoman said it was to ensure both were COVID secure. Councillor Derek Green was elected deputy mayor to step up to the mayoralty for the 2022-23 civic year.
City's pubs to people ratio, eighth highest in the UK. Winchester has the eighth highest ratio of pubs to people in the UK, according to the latest research. A recent study by money.co.uk, the city has one watering hole per 1,040 residents. A study analysed by government data and found that Scarborough has the highest ratio, with 640 people per pub. Salman Harkey, senior personal finance writer for money.co.uk, said in the UK there are around 47,000 pubs to serve the 66 million people living in the United Kingdom. That's approximately 1,000 pubs per 1 million people. Naturally, the number of pubs and people fluctuate across the UK. So which towns and region have the most pubs per people? To work this out, we discovered the number of pubs in each local authority district, as well as the population for the same area. We then divided the population by the number of pubs to establish which region in the country has the highest population density.
Not dentistry.
No, I nearly said it. I'm very sorry, ladies and gentlemen. It is density.
Marwell Zoo announces the death of its last cheetah. Marwell Zoo has announced the sad death of its last cheetah. The zoo confirmed on their Facebook page on Monday that Tano, an eight-year-old cheetah, has died following persistent health issues. A spokesman said, "It's with sadness we announce the death of cheetah Tano. He was 8 years old and he arrived at Marwell from Landau Zoo in Germany with his brother Jabal in 2014. He recently developed some persistent health issues which were being managed by our veterinarians and animal care team. However, over the last few days, his quality of life deteriorated and a difficult decision was made to euthanise him. Tano loved lazing around in the sunshine. He was gentle but a bold character and he will be incredibly missed by his keepers."
Local MPs meet farmers at a crucial time over trade deals. Local MPs have been briefed on farming issues by the local farmers. Hampshire NFU members met Steve Bryan about legislation, notably the government's new Animal Welfare Action Plan. The action plan aims to improve welfare for animals by introducing a number of measures, including incentives for farmers to improve animal health and welfare through future farming policy. A meeting took place at Newmer Farm, run by NFU South East Livestock Board Chairman Ben Robinson at Upper Weald in Alresford. Mr Robinson was joined by fellow NFU members John Proctor, Philip Tickner and Simon Tickner. Mr Robinson said, "Overall we had a productive discussion and members emphasised to our MP that while we're incredibly supportive of improving our already high standards of animal welfare, we have concerns around future trade deals. All trade deals must be properly scrutinised by the Trade and Agricultural Commission. The NFU believes that it is imperative that we don't simply import food, particularly meat, that has been produced to lower standards than our own from countries the UK has struck a trade deal with." Farmers discussed the benefits of cattle and sheep within farming systems and crop rotations, helping animal health, soil health and biodiversity. They also expressed concerns about a consultation on animal transport, also arising from the new Animal Welfare Action Plan. After the meeting, Mr. Bryan said, "The concerns the farmers raised are definitely something I'll be raising with my ministerial colleagues at DEFRA, and as we debate many of these issues. the debate around the proposed Australia trade deal and the return of the environmental bill to the House of Commons are both good opportunities to do that. Meon Valley MP Flick Drummond met Stephen and Chris Horne to discuss farm subsidies and rural crime. The father and son team own the 1,400-acre Bushy Down farm, which has been in the family since 1938. It grows a variety of crops, including wheat, oilseed, rape, peas and Murray Otter barley, used for malt to make many classic English ales. Ms Drummond discussed changes in farming methods, including how better crop rotation can protect soil and plant health. Now many pesticides and chemicals have been banned to protect the environment. The group also discussed rural crime, as too many farms have been victims of theft of equipment. Ms Drummond and the New Hampshire Police and Crime Commissioner Donna Jones have pledged to work together to tackle this. It's really important I get to meet farmers at Meon Valley to get better understand how the industry is changing since we left the EU and how farming is facing new challenges, especially around climate change and protecting the environment. Touring the farm, I was impressed by the modern equipment for drying and storing wheat, barley and peas after harvest. This was a major investment which took 9 months to build and replaced machinery which was 20 years old. In future, I'm looking forward to working with Stephen and Chris and other farmers in the Meon Valley as policy moves forward with the new Agricultural Act and Environmental Bill. I was impressed at the care farmers like Stephen and Chris show for the environment, as they do recognise their propensity depends on maintaining the land in good health so future generations of the family can take the farm on in years ahead.
Yes, I have an item on new appointments to council cabinet. Winchester City Council's cabinet has been filled following the exit of a senior Lib Dem. Jackie Porter decided not to retain her seat in the Worthies at the local elections. Her responsibility as cabinet member for built environment will be filled by Councillor Russell Gordon-Smith. Councillor Angela Clear will take the portfolio for communities and well-being, whilst Deputy Leader of the Council, Councillor Neil Cutler, will continue as Cabinet Member for Finance and Service Quality. Meanwhile, Councillor Kelsey Lurney will resume as Cabinet Minister for Housing and Asset Management. Councillor Linda Murphy for Climate Agent Emergency and Councillor Martin Todd for Economic Recovery.
The Greens' most successful election. The Greens are celebrating their best Winchester local elections. The surge in their vote was clear in Winchester, with one city council candidate polling more than 1,139 votes in the central Meon Valley ward, more than double the Lib Dem tally. Malcolm Wallace took 33% of the vote in central Meon Valley, a 19% increase on the last election. The Greens beat Labour in 10 of the 11 city council wards that they contested. Mr Wallace said the surge in votes for the Green Party shows that people recognise the urgent need for real action on the environment and know a better, greener future is possible. The Green Party has the policies to tackle the climate and ecological emergencies whilst also enabling our communities to survive. In the county elections, the Green vote more than doubled across the Winchester divisions, with the Green Party beating Labour in all the Winchester contests.
College pupil to represent the UK at chemistry contest. Winchester College pupil Rick Patel has been selected to represent the UK at the International Chemistry Olympiad for a second time. Rick, a top year student, achieved a near perfect score of 84 out of 85 in the first round of the competition earlier this year and was awarded a gold medal alongside nine other boys from the school. Rick has attended round two of the UK competition and for the second time has been selected as one of four young people to represent the country at the International Chemistry Olympiad. The UK Chemistry Olympiad is an annual competition aimed at pupils in their final year of school, with papers set by the Royal Society of Chemistry to identify the top sixth form chemists. This year, 7,160 students from 666 schools in the UK submitted scripts for the very demanding Round 1 paper. Dr. Chase McCaw, Head of Science at Winchester College, commented at Rigvic's achievement. The mark achieved by Rick in Round 1 of the UK Chemistry Olympiad was astonishing, and the fact that he has now twice been selected to represent his country at the international competition is an extremely rare distinction of which he should be very proud. COVID-19 restrictions mean that Rick will be unable to travel to the competition, this year hosted in Japan, so he will instead sit the 5-hour theory exam remotely in July. The Chronicle reported that Rick, in 2017, scored a higher IQ score than renowned scientists Stephen Hawking and Albert Einstein when he was aged only 14 years.
Goodness. Celebrant shortlisted. A celebrant based in Winchester has been shortlisted as one of the best in the country. Miranda Ash has been nominated for the Best National Celebrant Award in the 2021 The Celebrant Industry Awards, brackets TCIA, hosted by the Celebrant Directory. As an industry first, these global awards are set to recognise those delivering excellent as nominated by fellow celebrant colleagues, industry suppliers, couples and families. Miranda is an independent wedding celebrant with the Celebrations for All covering Hampshire and the South East.
Mum's mission to help others. What started off as a way for Samantha Monk to avoid a potentially lonely maternity leave is now helping dozens of parents each week and has celebrated 6 months since its launch. Winchester mum Samantha Monk launched Winchester National Childbirth Trust's Monday Walk and Talk event last year, having just had her second baby, Teddy. I started volunteering with the Winchester National Childbirth Trust in November 2020 when the second national lockdown came into force. I just had my second baby and was looking for a way to meet other mums during a very long, cold and potentially lonely maternity leave. I was delighted to be able to do something positive as the most miserable stretch of the pandemic set in. Having a baby for the first time is a shock to the system during normal times, and I couldn't imagine what it must be like for new mothers to have to make it through those first challenging months without family and friends to lean on. This month, the Monday Wincher Walk Talk and Walk... Sorry, I beg your pardon. This month, the Monday Wincher Talk and Walk marked its 6-month anniversary, and over 70 mums and dads attended. On top of that, Winchester is now running 4 other walks in other locations, along with a very popular dad's walk. The level of isolation experienced by new parents during the lockdown is really alarming. I've had a number of mums say to me that our first walk and talk is the first time they've left the house on their own with their 6 to 12-week-old baby. In one case, it was the first time her mum had ventured out of her house in 4 months. I'm delighted to say that we've been able to provide a safe place for new parents to meet. It's been a brilliant way to meet new people, and I've enjoyed this experience tremendously. It has done a world of good for the new parents of Winchester.
Thank you, Richard. Let me go on to the last piece of news in this particular recording. And it's exciting news we've all been waiting for. Another festival is given the go-ahead in the district.
Hooray.
The Winchester district will be home to yet another music festival. Mucky Weekender, a 3,000-capacity event, will be held at Vicarage Farm in Woodmancote later this year after a licensing application was approved by the City Council. Curated by Dub Pistols frontman Barry Ashworth, this is the festival's second year. It is named after one of Dub Pistols' biggest selling singles, Mucky Weekend. The band decided to create and host their own festival in 2019, using it as a way to connect with their fans and showcase both established and new musical artists over the 2 days. Barry Ashworth said, "Everyone's a star at Mucky Weekender. I'm a strong believer that the crowd is just as important as the performers. Everyone has a smile on their face and are full of love. It's the kind of festival you could go to alone and leave with 1,000 new friends. We are really excited to host this event and can't wait to put a smile back on people's faces." DJs and live performers have already been announced, including Happy Monday's icon Bez, who will bring Bez's Acid House Party, Tom Findlay, one half of the chart-topping electronic music duo Groove Amanda, Terry Farley, The Prodigy's Leroy Thornhill, Crafty Cuts, The Clash, Bads Don Letts, dance music legend Lisa Loud, and leading Balearic DJ Nancy Noyes, plus many more. The main stage has live performances from festival host Dub Pistols, the nine-piece Gentleman's Dub Club, performing their new album. Barry added, "The new site in Winchester could not be more beautiful, set in 28 acres of private parkland and stunning countryside. Our ethos is very much one of leave no trace. And judging by our first year, it's an ethos the crowd fully embraced too. Our last site was left cleaner on departure than when we entered it." The festival runs this September. Details will be announced in the following weeks. It will be supporting the local charity Tonic Music for Mental Health. And that concludes our reading of the Hampshire Chronicle for this week. Many thanks to the various teams involved in producing the newspaper and recording and copying and sending it out. Thanks to our readers, Ros Lydiard.
Bye-bye.
Richard Martin.
Goodbye.
I think she'd have gotten which word she had to use at that point. And goodbye from me, Peter Lydiard. When you have finished listening, please will you put the USB back into the envelope. Also put the label back into the envelope, please, and pop it in the post, and it'll come back to us here at our studio in Twyford. Well, thank you for listening, and we look forward to reading for you again at a later time.
Well done.